I've got what you asked for.
Cade was sitting in a car in the airport parking lot, rented with another false ID after he'd gotten off the plane from France. He was using a prepaid cellular phone to call the number he'd been given, just as they'd previously arranged.
Good. Bring it to me.
Well, happily. Just tell me where you are.
Ever the eager one, aren't you, Commander? It's so touching to see your enthusiasm.
The Necromancer gave Cade a detailed set of instructions as to where and how he was to deliver the package. The former Templar commander jotted them down.
I want proof of life. I'm not turning this thing over to you until I see that Gabrielle hasn't been harmed.
Proof of life? Don't you think that will be a bit difficult, given that your wife wasn't really alive when she came to stay in my care, Commander?
Cade gritted his teeth but didn't respond. Technically, the Necromancer was right, but the bastard knew what Cade meant, and he'd be damned if he was drawn into a conversation about semantics.
And as for sweet Gabrielle being unharmed, I'm afraid you ruined that possibility the day you married her. After all, you didn't think she brought all this unwelcome attention onto herself, did you?
Cade told himself that Logan was just trying to mess with his head and did his best to ignore what the other man said. But the notion was planted in the back of his head like a constantly mutating virus he found it hard to shake off. In a way, the Necromancer was right. If Cade hadn't entered Gabrielle's life, then she probably would be alive and well somewhere in the world right this very minute. Cade had caught the adversary's interest for whatever reason, and she'd been an unwitting casualty of that. In a way, he'd been the one to...
Stop that!
He was no more responsible for Gabrielle's death than the victim of a serial killer was responsible for their own demise. He knew that. It had been the adversary who had killed Gabrielle. The adversary, and the adversary alone. Cade had done nothing to bring the creature's attention upon them, and he was not responsible for what had ultimately happened. He'd killed the bastard that had invaded their home and threatened his wife. How was he supposed to know that a deeper, darker evil was lurking within the man's form, just waiting for a chance to show its face in the light? Bottom line, he couldn't have.
Which is why you need to keep that asshole out of your head and do what you came here to do. Rescue Gabrielle.
There was no way the Necromancer was going to come to the meeting himself. He was far too intelligent for that. But even if he used a series of cutouts to keep himself isolated, Cade knew that eventually those cutouts would have to lead back to the one in charge. Link by link, Cade intended to use the information he gained to find the Necromancer, starting with whoever was sent to meet with him tonight. Given Riley's veiled comments about being ordered to bring him in, Cade knew that his house was most likely under surveillance. That meant he was going to have to find somewhere else to question his guest. Luckily, he had a place in mind. The Templar Order had safe houses and equipment caches in nearly every major city. This particular one was located along the water in Stamford, a quiet residential community about half an hour north of New York City along I-95. The house was set back from the road behind some well-manicured hedges that provided a good deal of privacy, but also prevented Cade from getting a sense of whether or not the safe house was currently in use. That left him no choice but to bite the bullet and go see for himself. He pulled into the driveway and up to the terminal controlling the gates. Cade was hoping the order hadn't seen fit to refresh the codes in the last month. The gates swung open slowly, allowing him access. Cade drove to the end of the driveway and put the rental car in park. He walked to the access panel at the garage door. The safe house was well stocked, and not just with arms and equipment either. Cade ate a hearty lunch, fueling up with the energy he knew he was going to need later, and then headed for the cellar. He knew immediately that it would serve his purposes. The room was fashioned of bare concrete without any external doors or windows, which would help deaden any noise the prisoner made. The ceiling was low and had exposed joists for the floor above. That would make securing the prisoner easier. Add a drain in the center of the floor and spigot for the hose on one wall, and he could almost imagine that the space was custom-made for what he had in mind. He knew the garage would hold a variety of tools, for knights in the field often had to make repairs to their arms and equipment, and planned to take the rest of what he needed from there. He wasn't subtle. A hand drill worked just as well as an electronic one, and a shattered kneecap hurt no matter what you broke it with. Cade didn't care who the Necromancer sent in his stead. He was going to get some answers, no matter what it took. Gabrielle deserved no less. The meeting was scheduled to take place just after 8 p.m. in the parking lot of an old elementary school that had been slated for demolition months earlier, but which the city hadn't gotten around to actually tearing down. Kate had surveyed the place via Google Earth prior to leaving the safe house. He memorized the general layout of the school buildings and the surrounding neighborhood in case something happened and he needed to make a quick getaway. The school stood by itself at the end of a short lane surrounded by elm trees. As he approached, his headlights picked out a thick chain pulled taut across the entrance to the parking lot. There was a hole in the chain-link fence off to one side that looked large enough, and Cade was able to drive the rental car through it without any difficulty. Once in the parking lot, he continued to the far end and parked under a large elm that provided plenty of shadows for him to hide in, facing back the way he had come. He rolled down the driver's window, then got out of the car. Cade was wearing boots, dark jeans, and a thermal shirt under a black motorcycle jacket. He'd left the jacket partially unzipped, despite the cold. He wanted easy access to the pistol he was carrying in a shoulder holster if things went south. He opened the trunk and took out the messenger bag that now only contained the hand and his blessed sword. He set the bag atop the trunk for a moment when he was done, so that he could use both hands to buckle the sword across his back. Feeling much better now that he was properly armed, Cade settled in to wait. 10 minutes passed. 15. Cade was just starting to grow impatient when he spotted movement among the trees off to the right of the parking lot. He drew his gun and flicked off the safety, but kept the weapon down along the side of his leg where it wouldn't be easily seen. For all he knew, the newcomer was just a local out for a stroll, and he didn't want to get anyone up in arms unnecessarily. As the figure came toward him, the size and build told him it was a man. He could also see that the newcomer was moving with an odd sort of hitch in his step. Something about that walk set Cade's nerves on edge. Before he knew it, he found his fingers tightening on the grip of his weapon, and he could feel his heart hammering in his chest, but he really wasn't sure why. Cade waited until he judged that the figure had drawn close enough, and then reached inside the driver's window and hit the headlights, bathing the newcomer in their illumination. Instantly, Cade understood his gut-level trepidation and knew beyond the shadow of a doubt that he wasn't getting any answers tonight. The man standing in front of him was dead. 2, maybe 3 days at most, but definitely dead. His skin had the waxy pallor of the newly embalmed, and his eyes had been sewn shut. He must have dug himself out of his own grave, for his fingers were caked with dirt, as was the suit he'd been buried in. In his hands, he carried an iPad. It was such an incongruous sight that for a moment, Cade could only stare. The Walking Dead, carrying an iPad. Cade considered shooting the revenant and forcing the necromancer to send someone else to pick up the package. He even went so far as to raise the gun and line the muzzle up with the revenant's skull. One shot and the thing was out of its misery. It was only when he realized that his enemy would simply force more innocent people to claw their way out of their own graves to do his bidding that Cade was able to pull his finger off the trigger. The revenant wasn't bothered by the headlights shining in its face. Its eyes had been sewn shut, after all. And yet it walked unerringly toward him with that strange hitching gait and came to a halt less than a yard away from where Cade stood.
No, oh, you son of a bitch.
Cade's entire plan had just gone out the window. It made no sense to torture a dead man. He wouldn't feel anything. Never mind the fact that he couldn't talk. Cade reached out and took the iPad from the revenant's fingers. It made no effort to resist. The screen was dark, but when he wiped a finger across it, the device woke up. A video appeared. In it, a woman lay on her back on a portable cot in a room somewhere. The video had a grainy quality to it, but it was still easy to see that the woman was Gabrielle. She was staring at the camera, but it was clear from the expression in her eyes that she wasn't seeing it or anything else, for that matter. Occasionally she'd blink, which is how Cade knew she was still alive. He scoured the image, looking for something that might help him identify where she was, but came up empty. Whoever had filmed the video had been careful enough to keep from leaving any clues. When the video was over, a written message appeared on the screen.
Give the package to the Revenant. Instructions for next acquisition to follow.
That was all. The message stayed on the screen for a moment, and then the screen went blank. No matter what he did, he couldn't get the tablet to come back on again, either. He was getting ready to take it apart to try and salvage the hard drive, thinking he might be able to get a tech to take a look at the video if he could download it from the drive. The screen began to melt from the inside out. Kay dropped the tablet on the ground and watched as flames quickly consumed it. The Revenant was still standing there, waiting for its package. Cade picked up the bag, extended the strap, and slung it over the Revenant's outstretched arm. No sooner had he done so than the Revenant turned and headed back the way it had come. Cade watched it for a moment, considering, and then set off on foot in its wake. The Revenant was easy to follow, given the difficulty it had moving in its reanimated body, and Cade was able to stay within a few feet of it as it crossed the parking lot and headed for the woods from which it had emerged. It didn't seem to notice him following along in its wake, or if it did, it apparently didn't care. Just because he couldn't question the damn thing didn't mean there wasn't anything to learn from it. If he could follow it back to wherever it had come from... The moon cast a silvery hue over everything and provided enough light for Cade to keep the Revenant in sight, even when they entered the trees. The dead man plunged ahead, forcing his way forward through the overhanging branches and thick brush growing between the trunks. He stuck to his direction of travel with single-minded devotion, refusing to deviate from it. It didn't matter that there was a clear path only a few feet to one side. The Revenant followed whatever path he was seeing in his head with unerring accuracy, a juggernaut with a mission. Cade let himself fall behind the creature by about 15 feet, close enough that he could keep it in sight, but far enough back that he would have some advance warning when they reached their destination. He didn't want whoever was waiting for the Revenant to see him before he saw them. Thanks to his earlier research, he knew these woods extended for a couple of miles before ending at the eastern edge of a newly developed residential complex. Hopefully, they would either change direction or come to their destination before they reached that point, because he couldn't let the Revenant be seen by Joe Citizen. They'd been walking for about 15 minutes, covering roughly a quarter mile or so in that time period, when Cade caught sight of something moving through the trees off to their left. In the dim light, it was hard to get a good look, but he had a sense of a sleek body moving through the trees on all fours. A dog, maybe? If so, was it just some neighborhood mutt? Or was there something more dangerous on their trail? Cade kept moving, but now he was trying to keep one eye on the Revenant and another on the trees around him, searching for whatever it was he had seen. He was soon glad that he had, for he saw it again moments later, on his right this time. It was closer now, too. Definitely a dog of some kind. He caught a glimpse of a sleek snout and ears tipped back in an attitude of attack, but then it was gone again, lost in the deepening darkness between the trees. Unfortunately for Cade, not lost enough. The first of them came rushing in from the side, and only the fact that Cade had caught a glimpse of it out of the corner of his eye allowed him to throw himself to the side as the creature passed through the spot he had just been standing. Cade scrambled to his feet. He drew his sword and put his back to a large oak in order to keep it from sneaking up on his blind side. He was just in time. Three of the creatures stepped out of the shadows in front of him. They were the size of Great Danes, but no living Dane ever looked like this. Their skin hung rotting on their frames, and their empty eye sockets seemed to blaze with an unholy light. Cade had fought their like before and knew them for what they were, corpse hounds. Arcane creatures dragged to Earth from another plane for a specific purpose, released to return to their home afterwards only if they fulfilled their mission. And in this case, it looked like Cade was their target. They charged across the grounds with unnatural speed, moving unerringly toward Cade. He met their teeth and claws with the sharp bite of his sword, directing every ounce of his anger down through the weapon at his attackers. All the anger and frustration he was feeling in being forced to work for the Necromancer poured out of him now that he had a target at which to direct it. His sword spun like a dervish, striking with deadly accuracy, neither giving nor receiving any quarter from his foes. Cade's martial skills and the added protection of his thick leather jacket kept him from suffering any serious wounds, though he was bleeding from half a dozen minor injuries by the time the hounds made their first mistake. One of them rushed in from the side, while Cade was engaged with its brethren in the front. But the wintry ground betrayed it, and it slid too far forward, opening itself up to a blow from Cade's sword. With one of their number eliminated, Cade's task of defense became easier. The fight continued for another few minutes, until a second of the creatures rushed forward, slipped beneath Cade's sword, and clamped Cade's left arm in its mouth. No doubt the hound had intended to drag him forward and into range of the other beast, but Cade had anticipated that, and when he felt the teeth clamp around his forearm, he rammed his sword up through the underside of the hound's jaw and out the top of its skull. With two of its companions dead or dying, the third hound decided it had had enough and slunk off into the darkness to lick its wounds.
God damn.
The zombie was long gone. Later that night, Simon Logan stood in the shadows on the other side of the room and watched the woman's chest rise and fall, as her body drew breath into her lungs and let it out again with a barely discernible hiss. It looked like she was sleeping, but he knew better. Her body was an empty vessel. Her heart beat, her blood flowed, but there was nothing of substance inside. Her spirit had been torn free of her mortal frame and now wandered elsewhere. He liked to imagine her in some dark place, lost and afraid. He knew her soul still existed somewhere because she had spent weeks tormenting him in his cell, returning night after night to haunt him mercilessly until he had agreed to get a message to her husband, Knight Commander Williams. It seemed their love united them, even in death.
How charming.
Logan felt his heart race and the blood pound in his veins as he considered that fact. The wife of his most fervent enemy, here, in his grasp, defenseless. It was almost too good to be true. He walked forward and stood over her. Her eyes were open, staring upward, but he knew she wasn't seeing him. He reached down and ran a finger slowly down the side of her face, across her chin, and down between her breasts until stopped by the buttons of her dress. She had a lush body, one that he would have enjoyed taking against her will, repeatedly, in fact, if there had even been a spark of awareness, of independent will left inside it. But there was not. He'd used his considerable powers to know the truth of that. Her body was but an empty shell, waiting for her soul to come home.
Too bad that's never going to happen.
When the dead had first whispered to him of the woman sharing William's house, he had simply been focused on finding a way to use that information against his enemy. But then he began to think about the situation, to see how best to turn it to his advantage, and he'd realized that he had a far greater opportunity before him than he'd previously realized. Williams loved his wife. He had spent years tracking the entity that he felt was responsible for her death, and had left honor and duty behind in order to care for her body when he discovered she had not passed into the afterlife as he had previously believed. This was a man who would walk straight into hell itself if it meant there was a chance to return her to his side. It was that love that Logan was using against Williams, that had forced him to carry out Logan's commands, to recover the very items he needed to bring his plans to fruition.
How exquisite. Using the very thing that binds Cade and his wife together so strongly as the linchpin that will tear them apart forever.
He looked down at the helpless woman in front of him with gleeful satisfaction.
Soon.
Riley sat in the cafeteria, gulping down some lunch that he couldn't even remember ordering, and wondering just what to do next. His team had been going over what little evidence they had for days and still didn't have a single lead worth talking about. The preceptor was growing impatient and was starting to make Riley's life difficult as a result. Unfortunately, there wasn't anything the Echo team leader could do about it. As far as he could tell, both Simon Logan and Cade Williams had gone down a hole and pulled it in after them. They had been focusing most of their attention on the Necromancer. Rightly so, in Riley's opinion.
The Necromancer was the known threat. The one who had attacked Templar commanderies, colluded with infernal creatures, and had attempted to use the power of the Spear of Longinus for his own personal gain.
If Echo hadn't locked him up, he would have continued in the same vein, leaving a trail of death and destruction in his wake. Clearly, the Tiger hadn't changed its stripes either. He'd left three missing, presumed dead, during his escape, and then, only a few hours later, a warehouse full of bodies. Who knew what the hell he'd be up to next? Riley knew Cade was in this up to his eyeballs. The phone call in Paris had made that abundantly clear. But Riley didn't think it was by choice. Somehow the Necromancer had coerced him into cooperating, and Riley would bet a month's pay that it all had something to do with Gabrielle. He'd fought beside Cade for years now. The Knight Commander might like to play fast and loose with the rules now and then, but he had his own rigid code of ethics, and part of that was making certain that innocent bystanders didn't get hurt. If you were working with the enemy, then God help you. Cade could be a ruthless son of a bitch. But those who were on the side of righteousness had nothing to fear from the man. The way the monk had been treated in Paris was proof of that. Riley was certain Cade had simply been trying to incapacitate the man and hadn't intended to put him in the hospital with so severe an injury. From Riley's perspective, Cade was as much a victim of this whole mess as that elderly monk was. Perhaps it was time to look at things a little differently, however. They'd had no luck tracking the Necromancer, so maybe they should focus their efforts on tracking Cade instead. If he was working for Logan, especially if he'd been coerced into doing so, then maybe finding Cade could help them find the real problem, Simon Logan.
It's worth a shot.
Riley headed to the tech room, looking for one tech in particular. When he found her, he made a beeline for her station.
I need you, McGreevy.
Uh-huh, that's what they all say. Then they don't call, they don't write, and before you know it...
The sudden silence must have clued her in. She looked back over her shoulder, saw Riley, and nearly had a heart attack if the look on her face was any indication.
Night Captain Riley!
McGreevy was a computer whiz, one of those kids who could have gone to MIT at the age of 14, but whose family situation required her to stay at home and care for her younger brother. Then, several years later, she suffered the horror of watching her entire family, mother, father, and little brother, slaughtered at the hands of a rogue vampire. When Delta Team had been dispatched to deal with the rampaging bloodsucker, they'd found McGreevy standing over the smoldering corpse of the vampire with a can of extra-strength hairspray and her mother's favorite cigarette lighter in her hands. With everything she'd had to live for taken away from her, the Order had stepped in and offered to help. McGreevy had been here ever since.
What can I do for you, Night Captain?
I need you to hand off whatever you're working on to someone else. I've got something new I'd rather have you dealing with.
Okay. Done. What do you have?
Riley frowned. She probably had algorithmic scripts ready-made to handle 100 different tasks, just the way Olsen used to. The thought of his old teammate put a knot the size of a gold ball in Riley's throat, and for a moment, he couldn't speak. Damn how he missed him. Olsen would have had this thing cracked in no time, no doubt about that. Riley looked at McGreevy once more. She stood there, patiently waiting, and gave no sign that she'd noticed his emotional moment at all. He knew he wasn't fooling her, but appreciated her courtesy nonetheless.
I need you to stop searching for Simon Logan and focus your efforts instead on Cade Williams.
Former Knight Commander Williams?
The very same.
Am I allowed to ask why?
No, you are not.
You're the boss. Anything in particular you want me to start with?
Riley grabbed a scratch pad off her desk and jotted down a list of names, about 8 in all. He ripped off the page and handed it to her.
Got it.
How do we keep track of who's using which safe house on any given day?
We can't. We can tell which safe houses are being used due to the entry and alarm codes attached to every property, but they don't tie to the use of a particular person.
So we can tell which house is occupied, but not who's in it?
That's right.
Good enough. Give me a list of houses that have been used in the last 70 hours, with a priority on those within a 100-mile radius of our present position.
Got it.
Call me the minute you have something.
Will do.
It wasn't much, he knew that. But at least they were moving in a new direction, and that felt better. He'd cracked this thing, one way or another. Bruised and bleeding, Cade made his way back through the woods to the school parking lot where he'd left his car. To his relief, the vehicle was right where he'd left it. He staggered over, unlocked the trunk, and put his sword inside, but kept the pistol with him. He'd take the chance of someone seeing it on the seat beside him, as there was no way he was going to be walking around empty-handed, not after the last few days. Cade discovered he had a text.
Test me again. And I'll skin your beautiful wife and wear her flesh as a cloak. Bastard.
Cade had to use all of his control to keep from hurling the phone against the windshield. If he did that and it broke, he'd have no way of reaching the necromancer. Cade was going to kill him. There was no doubt about that. But for now, he fought for control and just managed to hold on to his anger. Barely.
The staff of Anubis. You know where it is. 48 hours.
You have got to be kidding me.
Logan was correct. Cade did know where the staff of Set was. He'd been the one to secure it on the Order's behalf. Given the power the staff was believed to control, there was only one place the Order would feel safe storing it, in the vault-like reliquary deep beneath the Bristol Commandery. Only one of the most guarded places in all of North America, particularly after Logan and his cronies had broken into it half a year ago.
How the hell am I going to break into the reliquary and steal the staff without being seen and recognized?
He had been in and out of the commandery so many times in the last several years that he knew most of the people stationed there on site, and vice versa. There was no way he was going to be able to slip inside without being noticed. Someone was bound to see and recognize him.
You have got to be fucking kidding me.
For what felt like the thousandth time, he regretted his inability to control his travel via the Mirror's Road. If he'd been able to control his gift, getting in and out of the commandery would have been a snap. All he would have had to do was take a mirror to a secluded spot outside the commandery, step through it into the beyond, and then step back out again through a different gate into the reliquary itself. Finding a gate into the reliquary would have been easy. There was more than one mirror in the vault. Unfortunately, that's not how it worked. Not with his level of skill, at least. Traveling in and out of the beyond was a lot like playing Russian roulette. You never knew where that next step was going to take you, or if you'd even live to tell about it. No, he'd have to come up with a better idea, and he had less than 48 hours to do it. Half an hour later, Cade was soaking in the tub at the safe house, letting the superheated water wash the blood from his flesh and ease the ache from his muscles. He'd gotten away with minimal damage, considering the threat he'd faced. The wound on his upper arm had taken 4 stitches to close, stitches he'd been forced to put in himself since he had no one to help him. The holy water he'd splashed over the injury, first to kill any infection, had hurt worse. The liquid bubbled and boiled like he'd just poured hot acid on his skin. It looked worse than it had before by the time he was done, but at least he was confident that he wasn't going to catch some strange disease from the corpse hound's claws. Who knew where those things had been? He laid his head back against the edge of the tub and racked his brain for some idea of how he was going to penetrate the commandery and get inside the reliquary. He'd already wasted an hour, and he still didn't have a clue. Brute force was definitely out. They'd gun him down first and ask questions second. Unfortunately, the stealth approach was also out of the question. He should know, for it had been his job to beef up the security in the face of the necromancer's attacks earlier that year. If they were still following his recommendations, then a mouse couldn't fart in that place without the Templars knowing about it.
That leaves subterfuge.
He had an inkling of an idea as to how he might get onto the grounds. It wasn't a great one, but at least it would serve its purpose. He would still need to penetrate the vault after that, and he didn't have a clue how to go about doing so. He lay there, watching the steam rise from the surface of the water, insubstantial as a wraith, and felt the clock ticking down, minute by minute by minute.
Oh, there has to be a way, dammit.
Frustrated, he put his palms on either side of the tub and abruptly pushed himself out of the water. He couldn't just sit there. He needed to be doing something. He grabbed a towel and wrapped it around his body as he stepped over to the sink, intending to brush the sour taste of despair out of his mouth. The mirror above the sink had fogged from all the steam, and as he reached to wipe it away, his reflection flickered like a ghost in the background. As his palm wiped the condensation away, the realization of what his subconscious mind had been trying to tell him for the last 20 minutes hit him like a runaway truck. He stood there, grinning stupidly at his reflection as he thought it through, and decided that it might just work. First thing he had to do was get in touch with a dead man. Abrams lived on the 3rd floor of an apartment building in Norwalk, the next town over from the safe house's location. It took Cade less than 10 minutes to drive over there, find a parking spot in the small dirt lot next door, and climb the 3 flights of stairs to Abrams' apartment. He paused outside the door, pretending to be looking for his keys, as an Asian woman, Thai or maybe Filipino, Cade wasn't certain, went past him and down the stairs to the next floor. Cade took a final look around to be certain no one was watching, and then drew his pistol from the shoulder holster he wore underneath his jacket. He raised his foot. Cade moved forward into the apartment with his gun out before him in a ready position. There was an open doorway to his right, kitchen, empty. Then a living room to his left, where a wiry-looking man in jeans and a sweatshirt was reaching into the drawer of the small table near the sofa. Cade didn't need to be told what was in that drawer. He knew it was a weapon of some kind and acted accordingly, slamming one foot against the outside of the drawer and pinning the man's hand inside.
Ow! 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 Ah! My hand! My hand!
Shut up! That's what you get for thinking you can pull a gun on me!
Lenny Abrams put his other hand in the air in surrender.
I didn't know it was you! Honest! All you had to do was knock, I would have let you in!
Yeah, right. Tell me another, Lenny.
I swear! I swear! Come on, let me go! You're gonna break my hand!
Cade put the barrel of his weapon right against Lenny's forehead, and the medium abruptly went still.
No, 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 please, 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 don't shoot, I didn't know, honest, I swear!
You're gonna take your hand out nice and slow, right, Lenny?
Uh-huh!
Cause you know what will happen if you don't, right?
Yeah, I'll be good, I promise!
Cade took his foot off the drawer and backed up a few steps out of Abrams' reach.
Ah! Oh! What the hell do you want?
I'm in need of your services, Lenny, and lucky for you, I'm even willing to pay for them.
Lenny Abrams was a medium. Cade had run into him a few times in the past. Abrams had kept his nose clean after a warning from Cade to stop bilking his clients with fake seances, and so Cade hadn't turned him in. The Order had frowned heavily on people who called up the spirits of the dead just to satisfy the curiosity of the living, and would have quickly made Abrams' life miserable had he been turned in, which put Abrams in Cade's debt. Cade was about to call in his marker.
Yeah? Well, what exactly do you need me to do?
The idea was a simple one. Call up the spirit of the man who had last been in charge of the reliquary, Nigel Stone, leader of the Custodes Veritatis, the secret sect that cared for all of the Order's artifacts, and ask him if there was a back door into the vault. The question in Cade's mind was whether or not Lenny Abrams could manage to call up the dead man's spirit and keep him there long enough for Cade to get the answers he needed. Lenny certainly thought he was up for the challenge.
Seriously? That's all you wanted? I thought you were going to ask something difficult. Okay, give me a few days.
I don't have a few days. I need you to do it now.
Now? As in right now?
Cade just looked at him. Lenny glanced at the gun in Cade's hand and then back at the steely look on Cade's face.
All right. Where do you want to do this?
This kitchen table seems like a decent place.
The reality of the situation was that Abrams was the real deal. Just as Cade had the ability to read the psychic residues left on objects by those who last touched them, or the gift of walking the mirror's road, Abrams was connected to the spirit world in a way that few others were. As a result, he didn't need anything beyond his own innate skills to connect with the spirits of the dead. All the pomp and circumstance that he put into the seances he performed for clients was just that, pomp and circumstance. It didn't impact the success or failure of his efforts at all. All Abrams needed to do the job was himself. The two men sat down opposite each other at the kitchen table.
What can you tell me?
Stone died alone after being tortured by a group of necromancers who reanimated the body of his dead little girl and let her chew through his internal organs until he bled to death.
Oh, tell me you weren't serious.
Do I look like I'm joking?
Lenny put his hands flat on the tabletop, palms down, leaned back in his chair, and closed his eyes.
Jesus. What was his name again?
Nigel Stone.
Names have power. It was one of the basic rules underlying the supernatural world, Cade knew. With the right name, one could do some incredible things. It was with the creature's true name that Riley had been able to bind the angel Barakel in the tunnels of the Eden Complex, and how Cade had called the scream of angels that had torn Barakel to pieces shortly thereafter. Names have power, and a name was all Lenny needed to locate the spirit of the dead man and drag it, kicking and screaming, back into this world for a little chat.
You know, given the way he went out, I don't suspect he's going to be all that happy to be brought back. So don't blame me if he's too pissed to answer your question.
And without further ado, Lenny called to the dead. It happened so quickly that for a moment, Cade thought he was faking it. One moment, Lenny was sitting, half slumped in his chair, hands flat on the table in front of him in a relaxed position. And the next, he was sitting up ramrod straight in a manner that made it look like someone had shoved a piece of steel rebar down along his spine.
Nigel? Nigel Stone? Can you hear me?
I'm dead, Williams, not bloody well deaf.
Cade felt the hair on the back of his neck stand on end. Stone had only spoken to Williams once after the attack on the Broadmoor Commandery. Their conversation had been short and conducted over a cell phone, but even so, Cade knew he was talking to the same man. On the drive over, Cade had thought long and hard about how to gain Stone's cooperation in breaking into the reliquary. The man had spent half his life protecting the objects inside the vault. Getting him to offer up his secrets would be against pretty much everything he had worked toward as a knight and as a commander of the Custodes Veritatis. But Cade thought he'd come up with just the thing.
How'd you like to help me gut the bastard that did that to your little girl?
In the seat across the table, the body of Lenny Abrams smiled a shark smile.
What do you need to know?
Tech Sergeant McGreevy found Riley in his office.
I think I found him.
What have you got?
I got one hit off the false IDs you gave me. Knight Commander Williams caught a flight to Paris the night after the Necromancer escaped and returned 2 days later, right about the same time the Echo team did. If you'd been flying commercial, you probably would have ended up on the same flight.
Riley nodded. He'd figured they would be able to track that one down and was glad that his hunch had proven correct.
After that, I've got Bupkis on the IDs. He disappeared back into the woodwork as soon as he returned to the States. Whatever he's doing, he's not doing it under any of those names.
Riley opened his mouth to say something, but McGreevy held up a finger in a wait-a-minute gesture.
However, I think I've got something much more interesting on the safe house issue. Like I said before, we can't track individual use of the safe houses, only that they've been accessed by someone with the proper authorization codes. We can tell when the gates have been opened and when the alarms are turned on and off, for instance.
Riley wanted to tell her to get to the point, that he knew all this, but he restrained himself. No sense alienating her just because he didn't have enough patience to go around today.
In the last 48 hours, there have been 3 safe houses accessed in a 100-mile radius surrounding the commandery. Of those 3, I'm fairly confident that I can match the use of the house to teams involved in routine assignments.
So they're all legit?
Yes, I think so. It doesn't totally rule out Commander Williams as one of the users, but I'm about 75% certain it isn't him. I know that doesn't help us, except from an exclusionary viewpoint, but while I was looking into those 3 instances, I discovered that there was a false alarm report from a 4th safe house in the same general area. The system came back up again almost immediately and appeared to be operating properly after that, so a team wasn't dispatched to the location to check it out physically.
All of which means...
that it could have been Cade monkeying around with the security system and making it look like an accident.
Good work, McGreevy.
Thank you, sir.
Any activity at the location since?
No, sir.
Riley knew that didn't necessarily mean anything. If Cade had found a way to bypass the alarm system, he could be there right now, hanging out and resting up for whatever he planned to do next, and they would still be getting a negative readout on their end. It sounded like it was worth checking out.
Address?
McGreevy handed him a slip of paper with the address printed on it in neat block letters.
Thank you, McGreevy. Not a word, right?
Word about what, sir?
It took Riley just shy of 2 hours to assemble the necessary resources and line up the clearances he needed from those above him in the command structure to make the takedown. Normally, the order frowned on assaults in broad daylight, which is why he bothered to get permission in the first place. But anything to do with the necromancer was a priority at the moment, and no questions had been asked. That was good, because he'd prefer not to have to lie about it if he could avoid it. When he had the go orders in hand, he ordered his team to assemble in one of the briefing rooms. He decided to use only Echo's command unit, knowing it would be less conspicuous, and he'd be better able to control the flow of information concerning the operation as a result. He waited for Simmons, Martinez, and Ortega to join him in the briefing room. The men had been alerted that there was an op in the works, but hadn't received any details beyond that. It was time to bring them up to speed. Riley tapped a computer's enter key, and a satellite picture of the safe house came up on a large wall screen.
This is one of the safe houses in Norwalk. Early yesterday afternoon, a suspect we believe can provide information on the whereabouts of the necromancer slipped past the building's security and took up temporary residence inside. The possibility is good that he's still there. Command has ordered that we execute a smash and grab on the individual in question and bring him in. The safe house is in a reasonably well-populated area, so we'll be going in undercover as U.S. Marshals. Word will be going out to local law enforcement that a team will be executing a warrant at that location, which should both keep them off our backs and deal with any civilian reports that come into them while our mission's underway.
Riley could see the 3 men glancing back and forth at each other, and he knew exactly what they were thinking. How did an ally of the necromancer know where one of their safe houses was? Never mind how to defeat the security to get inside it without setting off an alarm. If he was going to have their earnest cooperation, Riley knew he was going to have to share his suspicions with them. The screen went blank, and he turned to face them.
I know what you're thinking, so let's clear the air. I have reason to believe that the necromancer has coerced Knight Commander Williams into helping him, most likely by holding one or more hostages to ensure Commander Williams' cooperation. I further believe that Commander Williams' presence inside that safe house is part of a clever plan to allow him to be taken by our people without it appearing that he has reneged on his agreement to assist the necromancer in exchange for the continued safety of the hostages.
It wasn't too far from the truth. After all, he did believe that the necromancer was holding a hostage, Kate's wife, in fact. He just hadn't chosen to mention that the hostage in question wasn't actually alive in the regular sense of the word. It was a lie, yes, but it was a necessary one, and he could live with himself for telling it. Still, he made a mental note to include it in his next confession. For the moment, that would have to do. Ortega raised his hand.
Rule 7 engagement?
Non-lethal force unless and until Commander Williams chooses otherwise. I want to talk to him, not turn this into the gunfight at OK Corral. I don't think I have to remind any of you just how good a fighter the Knight Commander is, do I?
All 3 of them shook their heads. They drove past the house once in order to match the lay of the land with what they had seen in the satellite photos. It was a single-story dwelling set back from the street behind a thick hedge and tall iron gates. There were no cars in front of the house and no sign of anyone inside as far as he could see, but Riley hadn't expected there to be. Kate wasn't going to make a hash out of such basic tradecraft. He was too good for that. All four of them were dressed in bright blue windbreakers with the words U.S. Marshal on their backs in yellow letters and had badges on lanyards around their necks. If someone bothered to run the badges, they'd even come back as legitimate. The Order had had their fingerprints inside the computer systems of the major U.S. law enforcement agencies for decades now. In consideration of the roles they were supposed to be playing, they'd left the heavy firepower at home. They were all carrying their standard-issue HK Mark 23 handguns, and Ortega was armed with a Mossberg combat shotgun, but that was all. They weren't planning to have a shootout with their former commander, after all, just a sit-down chat. Martinez was behind the wheel of the Suburban, and he pulled into the driveway as they came up on the house a second time. In the passenger seat, Riley kept his gaze focused on the door and windows of the house in front of them.
Stay sharp and let's get this done right.
The trio made for the front entrance in a triangle formation, with Riley in the lead. Riley knew Martinez would go around back and prevent anyone from trying to escape that way while they breached the front door, so he put the other man out of his mind and concentrated on the job ahead. Up the stairs, over to the door, try the knob. Simmons got in with the ram. Riley and Ortega moved in.
U.S. Marshal!
Living room led to kitchen, led to twin bedrooms, and a bathroom in the back. It took them less than 2 minutes to cover the entire property.
Clear! Clear!
Riley lowered his pistol and looked around. The graffiti on the walls was the first clue to who had actually been inside the property yesterday. The Order maintained the safe houses in good quality, with simple but adequate furnishing in case knights on assignment had to stay there for any length of time. As such, they were normally outfitted with televisions, desktop computers, sometimes even gaming systems like an Xbox or a Wii to allow the team members to wind down after a mission. Looking from the kitchen into the living room, Riley could see that all of the electronics were missing. The entertainment center stood bare, and graffiti tags, most likely the gang signs and symbols of those who had broken in to rip the place off, had been painted on the walls, the ceiling, and even the leather couch. Their fugitive hadn't tipped the alarm codes. The thieves had when they had been deactivating them.
Damn it!
While Riley was casing an abandoned safe house in Norwalk, Connecticut, Cade sat in his rental car at a local restaurant bar down the street from the commandery in Bristol, Rhode Island, making sure he had his story straight before making his move. His session with Stone had been informative, to say the least, and now he had to put what he had learned to use. He'd racked his brain during the drive north, trying to come up with some way to penetrate the security surrounding the commandery without having to involve anyone else, and quite simply couldn't come up with one. He'd personally designed the complex's security systems and had covered every angle he could think of at the time. Nothing new had occurred to him in the months since. If there was a way inside the commandery without being seen, Cade didn't know it. With no other option available to him, he decided a little subterfuge would be necessary to get inside and put back on the black uniform of the parish priest that had worked so well in France. He picked up his cell phone and dialed a number from memory.
Yeah?
Lyons?
Night, Commander.
Lyons had been the sergeant in charge of Echo's 4th Squad under Cade's command for almost 2 years. The Changshi incident had left him with a permanent limp, and he'd been reassigned to a position as weapons master, teaching the initiates how to shoot on the commandery range, Cade had heard. They hadn't been tight, not like he and Riley were, but Lyons would certainly do him a favor if asked, provided the alarm hadn't been raised yet.
Yeah, it's me.
The two men chatted for a few moments without Cade getting the sense that anything was wrong, so he pretended to get to the point of his call.
Listen, I drove down to do some research in the library and got all the way here before I realized I'd forgotten my credentials. I'm parked at Charlie's down the street. Think you could pop over and vouch for me at the gate?
Sure. Give me 10 minutes to get this current class out of here and I'll be right over.
Thanks.
Cade sat in his car and waited for Lyons. About 10 minutes later, a pickup truck pulled up next to his rental car. Lyons didn't recognize him at first, not with his hair brushed differently and the dark-framed glasses on Cade's face. He was further surprised to find Cade wearing the black uniform of a Catholic priest and carrying a leather attaché case in one hand.
You already missed Halloween, Commander.
Cade calmly took a pistol out of his attaché case and pointed it at Lyons.
I know, but you should probably just think of this as a trick-or-treat gag anyway, okay?
Lyons's already light complexion went paler still.
What the hell, Cade?
Sorry, old friend, but I need to get inside the commandery, and you're gonna help me do it.
Fuck you. I'm not going anywhere. I know you. You aren't gonna shoot me.
Cade took off his fake glasses and stared Lyons hard in the face without saying anything.
Shit. What do you want me to do?
Just drive, and I'll explain what's going to happen.
5 minutes later, they pulled up to the gatehouse at the commandery gates. Cade's hand was inside the attaché case in his lap, the muzzle pointed at Lyons. He'd shoot if he had to. That was the one thing keeping Lyons in line at the moment, the recognition that Cade was desperate, and desperate men are dangerous because they have nothing to lose. Lyons handed over his credentials along with Cade's fake passport.
Who do you have with you, Sergeant?
Monsignor Evans, visiting from the Vatican.
The guard glanced first at the passport, then at Cade, before turning the documentation back over to Lyons.
Enjoy the rest of the afternoon, Sergeant.
Oh, I'll do my best.
Cade didn't relax until they were inside the gates and headed down into the underground parking structure beneath the main manor house. Like many of the other commanderies across the country, this one extended below ground for several levels. It was here that much of the community's actual work took place. Monitoring world events, training weaponry and tactics, teaching the initiates the history and philosophies that were the cornerstones of Templar belief. Here, hidden from view, lay the true work of the Order. The underground levels contained classrooms, laboratories, gymnasium facilities, a shooting range, and even a full-scale replica of a two-bedroom house used for live fire exercises was tucked away in a large cavern on the third level below the surface. Beneath all of that was the reliquary. To get there, they had to pass through several highly trafficked areas, and Cade was worried Lyons might use the opportunity to cause some trouble. At this point, the Templar sergeant was resigned to his role, however, and he led Cade deeper into the complex without difficulty. Eventually, they came to an elevator and rode that down to the lowest floor. Cade slipped his hand into his attaché case and found what he was looking for. He popped off the cap with his finger and stepped closer to Lyons.
Sorry, man.
Hey!
He jabbed him in the upper arm with the syringe in his hand, the one that he'd taken from the safe house's interrogation supplies. Inside was a mixture of Ativan and Haldol designed to put a full-grown man down in seconds.
What'd you do that for? Oh, damn it.
Cade glanced out, saw the hallway was empty, and decided to take a chance. Rather than leave Lyons in the elevator where he might be found, he dragged the other man down the hall to a set of offices he'd noticed the last time he was here. Cade took his old key card out of his pocket and slipped it in the reader, hoping it still worked. The lock opened. Cade stepped inside, grabbed one of Lyons' arms, and pulled him into the room. The room was arranged like an office, with a desk, chairs, even a coffee maker. But given the level of dust on everything, it was clear that no one had used the room in a while. Cade dragged Lyons around behind one of the desks, out of the sight of anyone peering into the room, and laid him flat on his back. He checked to be sure the man was breathing okay and then arranged the chairs to hide his body as best he was able.
On to the reliquary.
He left the attaché case behind, since he would no longer need it, and stepped back into the hallway, gun in hand. He walked down the hall to the last office on the left at the end of the hall. Like the others, this one had a card reader bolted next to the door, but it also opened with a hand scanner and a keypad. Now came the tricky part. If the system had been changed since Stone was in charge, if the failsafe he'd built into the system had been discovered and disabled, Cade's little adventure was going to end right here. And if it did work, he was going to have the pleasure of dealing with the armed men in the command center on the other side of the door the moment he stepped inside. There would be 4 to 6 of them. Not good odds any way you looked at the situation, but it couldn't be helped. Momentarily slipping the gun into the waistband of his pants at the small of his back so he would have his hands free, Cade stepped up to the hand scanner. He placed his right palm against the device, and then, using his left hand, he simultaneously pressed the buttons in all 4 corners of the keypad as the scanner checked his palm print.
Here we go.
Cade drew his gun and pushed open the door.